All right. So as is our habit, we like to honor Tim, but I just want to share a little bit that I am so appreciative of Tim's leadership and advice in my life from the moment I got here. I was just some kid who showed up in a LeBron James jersey. Man, I grew a lot since then. And some holy jeans, and I looked horrible, but he greeted me, and I was surprised to find out that he was actually the pastor. And Tim's just been such a blessing on my life from that point until current. So if Tim has been a blessing on your life, how he has been with mine, please just warmly receive him and show him how much you love him.
Thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you. I want to talk to us today. We're getting ready to, you know, the month of February's big holiday is Valentine's Day, and things are heading that direction. And I thought I'd encourage, you know, especially the men, maybe you want to go out and think this thing through and do something special. And even if you don't want to, maybe you should. That's another way of putting it. My wife and I, we don't do a whole lot, but I try to remember something, you know, get her a card or whatever. And so this is the month of love. And so I thought today I would talk to you about increasing our love. I think that anything we can be reminded of, I probably won't say anything new today, but anything we can be reminded of to increase our love is a good thing. And before I share, though, I have a little story. This is really for the ladies. Ladies, I think you'll be able to relate to this story, a story for the ladies to really connect to. I'll just kind of read this and I won't ad-lib too much. She lay there watching his chest rise and fall as he breathed. She didn't want to wake him, not just yet. She wanted to give him his well-deserved rest. His love for her has always been unconditional, comforting her through bad times and sharing her excitement when times were good. He was so sweet, so generous, so honest, so loyal. Then he turned over and looked at her. She could see the joy on his face. She could see that he was glad to be there with her. She looked deeply into her soul, into his soulful eyes, and whispered, "Good doggy." Yeah. Sorry, I just couldn't resist. Some women are laughing way too hard. I'm just saying. Sorry, guys. Turn to John, 1 John, excuse me, 4:20. 1 John, 4:20. I remember being a young man and having someone take me to 1 Corinthians chapter 13, and I'm not going there today. Maybe we'll get there later. We've been there many times, and he went through that's the love chapter in the Bible, 1 Corinthians 13. That's not where we're going, 1 John 4. But he said, take that word love right there and put your name over top of it. And I've memorized that verse, you know, love suffereth long and is kind, in the King James Version, nevertheless. Love envieth not. And I thought, that's hard. Tim is patient. That's what suffereth long mean. Tim is kind. Tim does not vaunteth himself. He's not puffed up. Does not behave himself unseemly and seeks not his own, is not easily provoked, speaketh no evil, rejoices not in iniquity, but Tim rejoices in the truth. Tim bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, and endures all things. And then that last line comes in, Tim never fails? Well, the more I love, the less I'll fail. The more my love is manifest, the less I'll fail. It's a prescription for victory. So here in 1 John 4:20, as we talk about increasing our love, it says, if someone says, I love God, and hates his brother, he is a liar. For he who does not love his brother whom he has seen, how can he love God whom he has not seen? If I can't connect with my brother lovingly, who I have seen, it says, how will I connect with God lovingly, who I haven't seen? Now, I know that seems a bit backwards, doesn't it? Like, have any of you seen God? Well, kind of, yeah. We've experienced God, and we know God to be trustworthy. We know God to be right. We know God to be all those things that I ascribed, there's the word, that I ascribed to the puppy dog in the funny story. We know, we can count on God. We can count on God more than we can count on the puppy dog. And then we know these people. People. Yeah, people. And we know them, and connecting with them in love is not as easy as the puppy dog. And surely not as easy as God. Wow. That's kind of a heavy thing, isn't it? Still, God is saying, how can you say you love God who you haven't seen when you don't love people you have seen? That's a heavy load, in a sense, to put on us. But let's just say it in another way. My level of relationship with God will never exceed my level of relationship with God's family. I gotta somehow be doing something on this horizontal level in order for my vertical level relationship with God to grow. Because this vertical level gets stalled out when this horizontal level gets stalled out. And by the way, don't misunderstand, it's really important to have this horizontal love relationship with God, because without that, you can't do the horizontal relationship with people. One is not exclusive of the other in any way, shape, or form, but they both have a powerful effect on each other. So if I want to increase my relationship with God, I have to increase my relationship with God's people. And if I want to increase my relationship with God's people, then I also have to be increasing my relationship with God. So the evidence, if you will, of my relationship with God is demonstrated, by the way. It's made manifest for all to see in the way that I relate to the people that Jesus died to redeem. Not that they deserve me to be nice or kind or patient. Tim is patient. Tim is kind. Yeah, sometimes I don't feel like that. Anybody besides me have that experience? I am done being patient with you. Love is patient. Yeah, but I'm done being patient with you. I've had it up to here. I get it. If I have no use for someone, then am I saying that God doesn't have any use for them? Or that Jesus didn't die for them? It's hard. Or am I saying that the call of God on my life doesn't require me to love the people that he loves? Ouch. Am I being mean today? Yes, I am. And I'll tell you where the finger is pointed. Right here. This guy right here, you Betty, buddy, you better do it. I didn't mean Betty. I was just dumb. But that might have been prophetic. No, I'm just kidding. not at all. We all need this, I'm sure, but I need it as much as you do. This is to remind me as much as it is to remind you. I once heard a speaker say, every response we have in life is either out of love or out of fear. That didn't end up in my book, but it could have. Because that's part of what I talk about in Got No Phobia. We're either walking in the operating system of fear, or we're walking in the operating system of love. And so our responses give us some information on that. And by the way, that's a good thing. Even when our response is wrong, it's good to know, oh, that wasn't a good response. I can look back on it later and go, yeah, I need to think about that. Like, check myself before I wreck myself. As we become more Christ-like, I think we can learn to read our own responses to circumstances and different situations that we find ourselves in. And if we are responding in love, I think that we'll be filled with more peace. And if we're responding in fear, then we'll recognize it. Anger and frustration and confusion and all those things run with fear. The peace that passes understanding requires you to not demand that you understand everything. If you demand that you understand, then you cannot have that peace, because that peace is reserved for those who are willing to give up the understanding and walk in peace. Am I saying understanding is a bad thing? No. Sometimes it's good that we understand, but sometimes we get so, I've got to understand this, I've got to have answers, that we lose our peace. When we could have it and be patient for the answer to come. So if you find yourself responding in a fear-based response, then you have an opportunity to think, okay, I need to pull back, and I need to ask God to bring his peace into the situation. One time a young man who was a Facebook friend posted this on Facebook. He said, sometimes I feel like I'm way too nice to people. Just because I'm willing to help or do something sometimes doesn't mean that you should just expect me to because you don't wanna. I don't like being used as people's safety net. There is a difference between helping someone who needs it and being taken advantage of. Ugh. I can relate to that. I can relate to that feeling. Any of you hate being taken advantage of? Sure. But you've heard me say it before, so I don't, again, I'm not saying anything new today. Because God spoke to me years ago. And here's what I responded to the young man. I said, you know though, I write funny when I write on Facebook sometimes. You know, though, that being taken advantage of is the heart of Jesus' whole ministry. I take advantage of his grace every day. The more people take advantage of us, the more Christ-like we become. I'm not saying you always let people take advantage of you, because sometimes this so doing puts them in a position where they can't ever do anything for themselves. There is a time to draw the line. But rather than being angry that someone took advantage of you, recognize the Christ-likeness in yourself so that the anger can be dissipated and you can make a good decision about what happens to next, whether you're going to let them do that again or whether or not you're going to help them not do that again for their own benefit. It's different, isn't it? I just want to walk in the peace that he gave me. I want to walk in that peace, and I don't want that to be messed up because I get angry because I think that something is being done that's wrong, and I don't realize that something very right can come out of it. Because what was done to Jesus was very wrong, and something very right came out of it. Amen? I was asked a few years ago, someone said, what are you passionate about? What's your passion? Anybody ever see that commercial? What is it? Flo? I don't remember what company that is, but Progressive, yeah. And she goes to see her sister who's got a house. And her sister's pedaling the bike. And she's like, she's pedaling real slow and on her phone the whole time. And she's like, cycling's my passion. Somebody asked me what I was passionate about. They said, are you passionate about preaching? Or are you more passionate about writing? Or are you passionate about your church? Or would you be passionate about the idea of maybe getting to travel more? Are you passionate about praise and worship more than you're passionate about the word? And you know what I'm really passionate about? People. I've always been really passionate about people. Here's a thought. What do you think God is most passionate about? Let me give you a couple verses. This one you know. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son. But listen to this verse. Put them side by side. 1 John 2:15. You knew the other one was John 3:16, right? Okay. 1 John 2:15. Love not the world, neither the things of the world. Oh, wait a minute. For God so loved the world, but then John tells us not to love the world. Now, I think we're smart enough, mature enough, understanding enough, engaged enough that we understand God was talking about two different things. God so loved the world wasn't that, you know, he just liked the... I saw a beautiful video this week of a falls down in southern Ohio, all iced over and everything. It's gorgeous. It's posted on my Facebook page if you want to see. It's just gorgeous. My brother posted it. There are some beautiful, beautiful things in this world. Really, really, really amazing and beautiful. Joyce went to Hawaii. Is she still over there? Hi, Joyce, if you're watching. She's probably not. It'd be awful early for her to get up, wouldn't it? Like, what time is it in Hawaii? Probably like, yeah, it's 4 or 5 hours. Anyway, yeah, she'd be really up early. It'd be like 4 o'clock in the morning. But anyway, this world is beautiful, but I don't think God really was as worried about the world as he was the people of the world. He loved the people so much. And he's not saying then don't love the people when he says don't love the world. He's talking about the things of the world. So we get so attached to the things around us that we make them sometimes more important than the people. So God doesn't love something that he doesn't want us to love. I know that context is everything, but I believe God is passionate about people. I don't think you can get much more passionate than God is about people since he sent his only son, literally put on flesh himself, came here and let those people kill him. That's pretty passionate. You got to be pretty passionate to let your life be taken by others for their sake. So there were two contractors. I love this story. They both were about the same age and they'd been building houses in the same town for the same number of years, decades literally, in this not that small a town in this area, and they knew each other well. And so one day, retirement came up in their conversation. And one said he was so looking forward to his retirement. He couldn't wait to be done with blueprints and permits and all of the work associated with the construction business. The other said he was not planning to retire and that he couldn't wait to get started on his next project. He was building a home for a family whose oldest daughter would be 16 in just a few weeks. And in the fall, after the house was finished and they were living there, she would be going to her first dance. He could just see her coming down the stairs of that new house to meet her date at the door and get her first corsage. And he said the family also had two boys, twins, who were about 8. And they were going to have their own rooms for the first time when he finished the new house. And he knew they would just love them. And this house was going to have an amazing back deck on it with lots of room for people to come and hang out and for the family to enjoy. And they would enjoy themselves for years and years and years in this beautiful home. One contractor couldn't wait to retire because he was building houses, and the other one didn't want to retire because he was building homes. Interesting way to think of it, isn't it? One contractor primarily worked with building materials, and the other primarily worked with people. Oh, people. There they are again. Have you ever heard somebody say, I would add a great vacation if it just wasn't for the people? I'm not saying we don't need to get a little space now and then, but and somebody may be saying, well, you know, Pastor Tim, that's easy for you. You're a people person. Some people aren't people persons. I'm not trying to make you feel bad. I'm not trying to make you feel guilty. I'm not trying to try to talk you into something, being something that... What I'd like to do is I'd like to make us all hungry. God is a people person. And I want to encourage us all to be more like God. Now, let me just be honest. Sometimes you have to say no to some people so you can say yes to other people. I, as a pastor, there have been times when I've had to say no to the congregation because my family needed me. And there have been a few times, not as many as some pastors I've known in the past, where I was constantly, you know, I've never been constantly saying no to my family in favor of the needs of the congregation. But I do have times when I've said, you know, I got to go do this. There's a need here. And give me a minute, and I'll be back, and I'll make sure we find some time. When my kids were in school, I got to all their games and all their plays and all their things they were in. I did my very best to do everything I could. And I've known a lot of pastors who never got to anything their kids did. Not a good thing. But I am aware that sometimes it's hard to be a people person, especially when you know some people. They just don't make it easy. One of the reasons that God created people, I believe, was so that we could know Him better. Let that sink in a minute. Like we were made in His image, John, exactly. Like somehow we might know God better if we knew people better. Oh, that goes back to our first verse today though, doesn't it? There, I believe, is a part of God that cannot be known, at least not now, unless we know the person who's carrying that part of God. Think about that for a second. Some of the people we might be thinking we were going to reject might actually have a piece of God in them. Now, granted, it is hard to find in some people. Man, you need a pickaxe and a shovel and dynamite and all sorts of stuff to get to where you can find the good, the God in some people. It's work. But it's not work that's too hard, and it's work that's good, and it's work that's worthwhile. And if you can see the God in somebody that they don't even see in themselves, you can see more of God than you would have seen otherwise. You can become more aware of who God is and what God's like and how much God loves and how capable God is. Are you getting this? Is this sinking in at all? Like, I believe some of God cannot be known or connected to if we don't find that some of God in some other people. And I believe that when we get to heaven, we will continue to learn who God is as we spend more and more time with God's people. And I do believe when we get to heaven, some of them won't require a pickaxe. Probably none of them. They'll be ready to share of themselves, and the God that's in them will be seen. On a side note here, just as the fear of the enemy, or the fear that the enemy, I should say, that he has of you, is the fear that he'll attempt to put on you. Some of you may remember that from me teaching on fear and in the book on fear. The fear the enemy has of you is the fear that he tries to put on you. If you need to go someplace, he doesn't want you to fly. Your fear of flying is to keep you from going someplace where God wants you to be. There are all sorts of fears like that that are put in front of us as obstacles to keep us from fulfilling the purpose of God in our life. So people who might be very important in your life might be some of the people that you're the most afraid of, that make you the most uncomfortable. Again, don't misunderstand what I'm saying today. There is no way I can cover this whole subject in one, 30 to 45 minute message on Sunday morning. There's a lot to be said, and I can't say it all. This would take a good book and really probably one of those really big, thick, fat books. And then it still wouldn't be enough. So what if maybe some of the people that have been separated from us, each of us, let's include all of us because we've all had that. What if some of those people, we need to be ready and willing for God to make those things better so that part of God who we're missing, that we need to see more of, can be seen. It might be that the very person who is restored to relationship with you might, that process itself of the restoration of relationship might be God's very plan to show himself more for you and for them. I've heard people say, maybe I've even been guilty of saying it myself, we're better off without them, in response to people who have hurt us, who have hurt me. With people maybe who were hard to get along with. I get it. But is it really true is the question. If there's a little bit of God inside of them that we're not getting to take full, make full connection to, are we perhaps missing something that God wanted us to have? And by the way, sometimes it's not our fault that they've done that and we're still missing it, which is why we don't want to get an attitude that not only watches them go, but makes sure they stay there. That's the problem sometimes. Sometimes you can't do anything about their going, but you might be responsible for them staying where they went. I might be responsible for them staying where they went. Remember, I'm preaching it right here, this guy, right here. I don't think we can be better off without that peace of God. Sometimes there's nothing we can do to mine that peace of God out of that person, to dig that up, to stir them up into that area. But we'd be better off if we could. And we need to ask God's help because that's what he wants. Not everybody who has left this church has left happy. A lot have. There are a few people in this community that don't think all that well of me. I'm sure you're aware of that. If you want, you just way back there someplace is the end of the line if you want to. Yeah. I don't think there's a lot of people really. I kid. Have I ever felt taken advantage of? Absolutely. I have. But then it's okay because then I start to understand how Jesus feels. Or maybe I don't. Because maybe I'm feeling mad. And Jesus, I don't think, ever gets mad that we take advantage of him. Does he? He's always ready. Come to me, all you who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. 1 John 4:18, there is no fear in love, but perfect love casts out fear because fear involves torment. He who fears has not been made perfect. The word there could be complete or mature. not brought to the fullness of what God really has. So he who fears has not been brought to the fullness of God's love. I'm still pressing. I'm still moving into the promises of God. The promises of God are mine, but I'm still working toward them. So as a result, there are going to be times when I respond to people in a way that probably isn't really out of love. I get it. I will respond negatively, and when I see my negative response, it speaks to me. So maybe you need to just remember this little quote, because I quote it to myself very often. Negatives are developed in the dark room of fear. So when I find myself being negative, when I find myself being cantankerous, when I find myself being, well, you know, that's just who, you know, when I'm being that way, I need to make sure, pull back, pull up before you crash. You know. I don't want to be in the dark room of fear. I want to walk in his marvelous light. So when people respond to us negatively, maybe that is a clue of something too. You ever have somebody bite your head off? Actually, I see heads on everybody in the room, so apparently none of you have had your head actually bitten off. I see a few nubby fingers, though, where you reached out and drew back and you didn't get them all. Some people are like that, you know. Nice. Okay, pull my hand back there, count my fingers, make sure I still got them all. If somebody's responding negatively, what if we could think to ourselves that the response might be evidence not of the presence of love, but of the presence of fear? I've had people bite my head off and then immediately apologize, being honest and saying, well, you know, this just happened and this person came, you know, and they said this and blah, blah, and I'm sorry, I shouldn't have bit your head off. I'm still hurting over what they said, and you know, and that's a good thing if you can do that. Make sure you know, communicate those kind of things. That's excellent. When people respond to us negatively, do we then respond negatively back? Sometimes. But if we can see it for what it is, we have an opportunity to respond back in love. And that's a cool thing when it happens. Because it not only sets us free from the negative fear side of things, but it sets those people free. Think about that. Lord, help us right now. I'm just going to let you think. Think about it. Who was really negative to you recently? Who was really super negative to you recently? Think about it for a second. And then say to yourself, what are they afraid of? Because by the way, it will be your fault 9 times out of 10. It will be, you did this and you did that and rah, 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 and you're thinking, I didn't do this and I didn't do that. And that wasn't what I meant by what I did or didn't do. And you're like, and then you want to respond to, you know, pull back and, you know, you want to respond the way they're responding to you. But what if you could say, whoa, okay. So let me think here. I didn't do what they're saying I did, and I'm not responsible for what they're saying I'm responsible for. And what do they need right now? It may not be a hug, by the way, because if you do, they might hit you. But nevertheless, you know, maybe they need a hug and they don't know it. But maybe you need to hug them with loving words and express a patient, caring heart. If fear is driving their response, then we need to reassure them in love. Because love does what? It drives out fear. Love pushes fear aside. If they feel love, they're going to feel a lot better. So rather than becoming defensive in fear ourselves, what if we choose to work love? Like really make a conscious decision. Okay, woo. Saw what that was. Recognize what it is. Recognize that rising up inside of me. Stop it. And then I just pray for some words of love. To reassure them. They might not accept it, but you're better off if you give them words of love than if you give them the what for they just gave you. Yeah. I mentioned before that, you know, some people have stopped coming to this church, and we could be a much larger congregation if all the people who have come here over the years were to return. Just let me ask this. Are we afraid to reach out to some of them? Or do we think we're better off without some of them? Careful. We want to be careful. Some of them might be negative about their experience. So there might be moments in reaching out to some people that wouldn't be any fun. You know, I'm a mystery guy. I like TV mysteries. Anybody like me mysteries? I like mystery stories. Well, and they don't have to be TV. I've read some Agatha Christie. I haven't read even just a smidge of her work. She's written like 90-some novels. It's crazy. But I like mysteries. I like things like that. And one of the things that's interesting about most mysteries, especially some of the, you know, boilerplate mysteries that you see on the Hallmark Channel. There you go. I confess. I've watched the Hallmark Channel with my wife. Man, card revoked. Anyway, some of those are boilerplate. The same thing over and over. You know, they always have this, like, it starts with an obvious answer thing, and then you have to actually dig deeper to find out what the real answer is. Can I suggest to you that if you pursue people who used to be part of this house, especially, don't go after people who have found a good place to be and they're locked and loaded, but there are a bunch of people that could be here. If you're watching, we miss you. Come back. There are a lot of people who could be here, and maybe they had some negative thing. Maybe they butted heads with someone in the congregation. They didn't like this person. They didn't like that person. They didn't like the pastor. You know, again, I get it. Maybe they'll give you all sorts of excuses, but sometimes those things that are on the surface, the obvious answer. You know, the person who gets arrested first in the mystery, and then you find out it wasn't that person, it's somebody else. Sometimes what's going on with these people is something else. Something else is going on. And if you can help them see it, you might be able to restore them in love to the level of relationship that God wants them to have with a lot of people who need them as much as they are needed. So the negative, defensive thing might just be turned around, and we might be able to be the one who loves and be the one who restores and be the one who helps and be the one who encourages, putting courage back into people instead of fear. Yeah. Amen. I think you can do it. I think he's already done it in you. Let him loose.